that you came to fix something. I only have these stones here, I said, at a loss for words, and offering her the four framed opal tears. I doubt they will look very good in the tiara, but considering the circumstances... And you can't craft new ones in time? It took me 22 hours to craft these. If we only have 30 minutes, then I am afraid that, well, it's simply not possible. I recall someone only a few minutes ago mentioning how nothing is impossible, and I believed that someone. Mount the tears. At least they will look better than those ghastly hearts. We will regard them as tears of happiness. Digging up the tiara from under the mound of clothes, I turned on design mode and recreated the images of the four bloody Tear of Tavia stones. Adding the projection of the tiara and hoping that I had enough time, I mounted my virtual stones into the sockets and opened my eyes. Let's see what turned out. Quest received. An opal tiara for a bride with a will of stone. You have completed the quest. An opal tiara for a bride with a will of stone. Item adjusted. Bloody Tear of Tavia has become Tavia's Tear of Joy. Description. Even the color of blood, violence, and aggression is capable of bringing joy and happiness. One merely has to desire it enough. Required to complete the quest. If someone could be kind enough to explain to me why the quest changed its name, I would be obliged enough to give them a gift, because the logic behind this sudden change escapes me completely. Chapter 2. Shamanic Dances to a Tambourine.
The Duchess of Kaltenor!
As Tavia made her regal entrance, the crier's voice resounded through the hall. I never imagined that someone could walk like this. From my vantage, it looked as if the girl was floating. Not a single fold of her dress, which was long enough to fully conceal her feet, suggested that the girl was taking steps. It was as if some magic had lifted her a few centimeters off the floor and was carrying her to the altar. And yet I was certain that no magic was involved in this effect. This was all her training and her experience. Tridial, a handsome young man with a military bearing, was standing beside the altar and looked at the approaching bride with unconcealed delight. Several moments was long enough for me to understand that this couple were marvelously well-suited for one another. Young, handsome, and independent, they would make excellent governors of some province. According to protocol, Tavia paused every two steps to receive the guest's blessings, and, seeing through the veil of ceremony, I could tell she shared her bridegroom's impatience. Even a momentary wait before the dream of your life reaches you can be quite tedious. I didn't know what traditions were invested in these blessings, but Tridial decided to violate them and, in spite of the cautioning cries of the master of ceremonies, rushed toward his Tavia. The girl hesitated only for a moment and, casting off her bridal veil, which was held by two pages, she too darted to Tridial. No sooner had the two embraced each other than they began to glow brighter than the sun, and an explosion shook the spacious hall, knocking the guests and the decorations to the floor. To everyone's amazement, both Tavia and Tridial had vanished.
"Honorable guests, do not worry," the Emperor said, calmly rising to his feet. The blast's shockwave had bowled him over as well. "Our beloved young couple is perfectly well. They have been transported to Newlywed Island."
A shocked hum rippled through the hall, and the NPC standing beside me, a provincial governor judging by his properties, whispered,
It has been over 100 years since anyone has been granted such an honor. Is it possible that these two have managed to create the yin-yang? Mayan.
Turning, I saw Anastaria's inquisitive face. It had been a while since I'd seen Anastaria this worked up.
Please tell me that you know what's going on.
What do you mean? You helped me arrange their rendezvous yourself. Of course I know what's going on.
Here's the video. I figure you'll understand everything without my having to explain it.
The yin-yang, said the girl reverently, taking the stone from my bag. Oh, boy. I think I may have granted her too much access.
Do you know what it's used for?
I have no idea, I admitted honestly. But it's real pretty, as far as rocks go.
It's not just a rock. I only have several notes about it, but they all basically say the same thing. No one knows what it does.
Damn, man. How do you always get yourself into these situations? What is it with you? I assume that this was only a rhetorical question, since Anastaria took my hand and led me back to the ceremony. Even though the young couple had left us, we, the guests, were still all here, and it was high time to unwind a bit.
"Say, Mayan, doesn't that girl over there strike you familiar?"
Anastaria asked me several minutes later. Looking in the indicated direction, I almost dropped my glass. It was none other than Mirida the Far-Sighted, now at level 133. The reason incarnate for my last 8 years in Barleona.
Yes, she does. We destroyed Sklik back in Beatwick Village together, I replied, doing my best to sound unaffected.
On the one hand, Marina, as the girl was named in reality, had helped me several times, even finding me one time in Beatwick. On the other hand, I didn't particularly want to see her, much less speak with her. That was all in the past, and I didn't wish to revisit it. It is pointless to try to figure out the reasons for what happened and determine who is guilty of what. It's not like I would be released, unless the girl went to the police and confessed.
Judging by your reaction, I can see that you two got your fill of each other back in Beatwick,
Anastaria said a bit mockingly. Her gaze, however, scrutinized me closely. Was she seriously trying to evaluate my emotions, too?
By the power invested in me by Eluna, began Elizabeth at that precise moment, and I pretended to be engrossed in the ceremony.
I had made up my mind. I would avoid any interaction with that Mirida. It is impossible to revisit the past, and there is no way to bring it back.
I hereby pronounce Tridiol and Tavia man and wife in absentia. May the heavens bestow their grace upon them.
Say what you will about Anastaria. She was quite considerate. She did not mention Mirida at all for the remainder of the ceremony. And yet something told me that sooner or later that question would pop up again. I would have to be prepared for it.
So what did you guys decide last night, anyway? I asked Stacy once the ceremony had ended.
We got together, hung out a bit, waited for you, and then went our ways. That's the short of it, at least.
Uh-huh. How very informative. Care to spare some detail?
Sure, I got some of that. We already knew that you wouldn't make it on time. All the forums were full of posts about how the hero of the Legends of Barleona is sitting at a jeweler's stall preoccupied with some crafting. Barca and Eric tried to rouse you, but nothing worked. So we met without you. We didn't really decide on much. Barcina is going to start looking for people to join raids. Out of all of us, she is the only one with experience recruiting. Furthermore, she already has a website, so we won't have to spend extra money getting one. My task is to find craftsmen and gatherers. I'll try to find good but inexpensive players for our clan. I expect some will contact me soon enough.
Contact you? I asked, surprised.
At the moment, yes, me. You are a bit of a dark horse for a lot of players. For all they know, you might disappear as suddenly as you appeared. I, on the other hand, have been in Barleona for a while. Players value that. Leidy volunteered to assist us with financial issues and accounting. That's what he did when he was on the outside. Plinto will be in charge of training. Klutzer will go on training with me, and Eric will pair up with Plinto. Beside all that, I have another proposal. I want to leave the post of deputy head of the clan.
You want to quit? I asked with even more surprise. Somehow my conversation with the girl was turning into a series of surprises.
A real clan deputy needs to do a lot of work, and I simply don't have the time, nor, to be honest, the desire for it. I had enough of that in Phoenix, up to my throat, in fact. I'm ready to help out as a consultant, come up with ideas, solve quandaries we come across, but I am not willing to do the job itself. We need a person who can dedicate practically 80% of their time to this job. At the moment, I'm not sure who should take over the post, either Klutzer or Barca, or some new person we find. Everyone else isn't really suited for it.
Just great, I muttered, mulling over the news. Anastaria wants to give up her leadership position. Who could see that coming?
Uh-huh. It's great, all right. Tonight at 9, we'll have another meeting. Here's the invitation. We'll discuss my resignation then.
Right.
Unless you need me urgently, I'm going to dash off to deal with some business.
Dash on. I have something to do, too, I replied, accepting the invitation to the clan meeting at the Golden Horseshoe.
Just make sure you don't wind up crafting something, you great craftsman, you.
Stacy smiled, and giving me a flick on the nose, went off in the direction of the auction. Well, let her go. I'll return that flick of hers at a later date. For now, I needed to get to the bank. Digging around the settings of the updated male imitator, I sadly remembered my programming past. Discarding the system's recommended templates, I began to dig around the male sorting logic. Let's see. I didn't touch the inbox settings. Mail from people I knew and those within a 100-meter radius would still come in instantly, while everyone else's mail would be accepted only once every 2 hours. I'd rather not have a constant stream of notifications scaring me. Next.
Hi, my name is blah blah blah. I know how to blah blah blah, and wish to join your clan on the following conditions.
I forwarded all the letters concerning prospective personnel to Barcina. If she was appointed head of recruiting last night, let her get an idea of what lies ahead of her. Apply filter. That's strange. By my estimates, of the 2 million letters I had received in the past few hours, about half should have been discarded. And yet this minor wish sank like a tiny yacht against the reef of reality. 12,000 less. I didn't even know how to feel when I realized that I would have to deal with the remainder on my own. Why are there so few people wanting to join my clan anyway?
Excuse me, but are you ignoring me or something? I'm going to find you in reality. I already have your address. We'll be waiting for you tomorrow, you jerk.
I'll teach you how to respect the right people. Messages like that were destined for the blacklist without the possibility of being retrieved. Look at that. They'd already found me. Oh, I'm so, so scared. Apply filter. 30% less. Damn. I was hoping that filter would deal with the majority. What's the rest about, then?
What's up? I saw your video from the Dark Forest. You sure did a number on those guys. Really good work. Good job. By the way, you've got some cool projections.
Once I had set up an auto-reply to this category of messages and deleted all the spam and advertisements, the size of my inbox shrank to a manageable 3,000 messages. For the rest, I was forced to employ the services of my imitator, since the remaining messages were analogous to,
"Hello! Everything is going real great for your clan. Keep up the good work. Hey, can I borrow 30,000 gold? I'll pay it back in a week."
The remaining pile featured missives from Lovers of Fun and Anastaria, as well as simple-minded folk whose writing even the imitator had trouble understanding. For example, "Swinery affixed the triviality to the knee." What this person wished to communicate with such a message remained unclear to me. I was forced to remove these letters by hand, sending their authors to the blacklist. After 2 hours of work, I was left with 33 unread letters that simply didn't fit any category at all. After making some more adjustments, sorting the letters based on whether I knew their sender or not, I was finally done with my mail. Of the remaining 33 letters, 31 turned out to be well-camouflaged advertisements, and only 2 offered anything of interest. Out of 2 million? Crazy stuff.
"Hi, man. I don't know how you found out about the scroll. The only other person in the know was the agent who placed the order with me. In any case, that doesn't matter. You need it, so here it is. A small warning. I stole the scroll from the Emperor's palace, so don't go flashing it around in front of any NPCs. They might start asking you some personal questions. We're even now. Good luck, Reptilus."
Scroll acquired. Commandant chess set, Legends and Myths. Do you wish to read it?
"This scroll is property of the Emperor of Malabar.
The following text is accessible to everyone. The Commandant chess set is a unique artifact used to gain entry to the tomb of Barleona's creator. 20 daredevils who manage to overcome the hardships and trials of finding the tomb will receive unimaginable items imbued with the power of the creator. These heroes will acquire unearthly grace and become the greatest warriors of the world. In the entire history of Malabar, no one will be able to match their might. The artifact is a puzzle that gradually reveals the secret coordinates of the tomb. One may find the tomb without the chess set, but only he who holds 6 or more types of pieces may open the entrance. The following text is accessible exclusively to players. The crafter of the entire chess set must be in a clan. Single players, players who are not in a clan, may craft no more than 2 basic level pieces. As soon as the set is fully assembled, the following players will receive the quest for the search of the tomb of the creator: the crafter of the chess set, the head of the clan in which the last chess piece was crafted. The head must have been in his or her post for no less than 2 months during the clan's existence. Example, the clan was created in January and Player 1 was its head through March. Afterwards, Player 1 left the clan, passing on the reins to Player 2. In May, the crafter of the chess set joined the clan and created the last piece in August. The following players will receive the quest: the crafter of the chess set, Player 1, Player 2. The deputy head of the clan, in which the final chess piece was crafted. The deputy head must have held his or her post for no less than 2 months during any period of the clan's existence. Example, see example above. A player who receives the quest may bring 20 persons, including himself, to the tomb. Other players may not receive the quest. The following text is accessible exclusively to the crafter of the chess set. The time for crafting the full chess set is limited and may not exceed 1.5 years. If the chess set is not crafted within this time frame, it will disappear and a global notification of this shall be sent to all Malabar residents. Number of remaining attempts to craft the chess set, 3. Current crafter, Mayan. The chess pieces may only be crafted from materials acquired on one's own or received in the course of a quest. If the owner of this scroll is also the crafter of the chess set, the likelihood of crafting the pieces is increased by 25%. Have a pleasant game.
It was a good thing that I was sitting down, because grasping the meaning of this scroll would have made me faint. It wasn't so much the stuff about the bonus, or that the scroll had to be returned to the Emperor. The first sentence was unambiguous about that. Or the fact that I didn't have to craft the entire set. 4 types of figures would have sufficed, and the way to the Creator would open. I was more worried about the situation with the deputy head. If Eckler was familiar with the scroll's text, then it would be in his interest to place Anastaria into the deputy head's position, so that she would receive the quest as well. Which is precisely what happened. Damn. Stacy has been the deputy head for 2 months already. Another 2 weeks, and it'd be too late. Their whole dance with Rick, it follows, was no more than a diversion. It sure was timely of Stacy to bring up the topic of changing her post. Damn again. But why did she bring it up anyway? Doesn't Eckler understand that he won't receive the quest? I was beginning to confuse myself. Realizing that I couldn't do anything at the moment anyway, I opened the next letter.
Good day to you, Shaman. My name is Calatea. Judging by your progress as Shaman, the first Harbinger will soon appear in Malabar, and he won't be a member of my order. Hansen the Panzer told me that you know of me, so I propose a meeting. Every day at 4 o'clock server time, I will be waiting for your invitation. Amulets are not required. If you do not manage to reach me within a month, well, we will have to meet in person and speak. I am currently in Anhurs. Calatea, Shaman Harbinger of Astrum.
I reread the letter several times, trying to understand how to get in touch with Calatea. The amulet seemed not to be an option, and neither was reality. Should I write an ordinary letter? I doubt it. Seems so prosaic and unshamanic.
Stop. Unshamanic?
There is one option, but I don't know whether it's available to players. Once upon a time, I tried to contact an NPC without an amulet, not knowing that doing so was impossible. All I got for my efforts was blindness and an unhealthy interest in my person from that Garanika. 4 o'clock server time is exactly in an hour, so I could try and get in touch with Calatea today. I've thought of how to do it. All that's left is putting it into action, right this instant.
I call upon a herald. I request your assistance.
You called me, and I came. If your summons...
While the herald was reciting the boilerplate, I went over what I was about to have him do in my head. A 25% bonus to crafting the pieces from Carmandon's chess set was a good thing, but the phrase... This scroll is the property of the Emperor. isn't flashing in various colors, meaning that I can still get that bonus. That's the first thing. The second thing is that something tells me that I should get rid of the scroll. Ants in the Pantsa said that the higher one's level, the falser the sensations one experiences. But upon reading the scroll, the thought that I simply needed to give it to the Emperor would not leave me in peace. False or not, it did not matter. That's the decision I've taken, and I'll stick with it, come what may. It's a habit I acquired back in the Dark Forest. The third thing... Okay, there is no third thing, but that doesn't matter either. Two things are enough. I received this here item through the mail. I produced the scroll and offered it to the Herald. It states quite clearly who the rightful owner is, so I summoned you. If it was stolen, I wish to return this missing item. Otherwise, I would like official confirmation that I am now the rightful owner of this item. I wouldn't like the Emperor to bear any ill will towards me. The Herald's eyes filmed over with a white patina for a moment or two, as though he had sunk deep inside himself. Then he returned to this frail world. "Please follow me." A portal appeared beside me, and the Herald beckoned me towards it. "The Emperor wishes to speak with you." "You will be admitted in a few minutes. Please wait here until then," said the Herald, having brought me to the palace garden. The garden had changed since my last visit. The aftermath of Guernica's attack had been remedied, and the garden had regained its earlier grandeur and beauty. The only difference was that now, in comparison to its previous form, everything was a bit sharper, more aggressive and martial. It was as if some militant architects had been given the restoration contract. They had replaced the previous romantic outlines with a terse, Spartan style, demonstrating thereby that even simplicity could be lovely as long as it was properly implemented. I couldn't say that the result was worse. The garden was as splendorous as before, but the fact that a change in the Emperor had ushered in a change in its design was interesting in and of itself.
"Man, the Emperor will see you now. Come with me."
The Herald appeared beside me again and, interrupting my examination of the fish in the pond, directed me to pass through the arch. "You have gained access to the office of the Emperor. Current level of palace access, 54%. Next interior, the library of the Emperor." The office of the Emperor had also been remodeled in the new style. A massive table, a pair of armchairs, three whiskered sentries as still as shadows among the room's niches, and walls decked out in red velvet. Everything else was cold marble, even the floor, which was bare of rugs or furs.
"Have a seat," said the Emperor, unfurling the scroll that the Herald had given him and studying it.
Tisha sat like a mouse beside Nati, not daring to look up at me. There were still 3 months left before Slate's rebirth, so I understood why my attractiveness with the princess had fallen to 30. These things happen. What can you do? I'd be upset, too.
"Before we begin our conversation, you need to answer two questions," said the Emperor, laying the scroll aside.
Nati seemed utterly unlike a mighty monarch and ruler of an enormous empire. At the moment, sitting before me, was a man who had suffered much in life, and who now bore the weighty burden of power.
"Did you steal the scroll? And, if not, did you commission its theft?"
"No, to both questions," I replied, never having imagined that the Emperor would start our conversation in this manner. "I am prepared to attest my words with an oath." Even if the Emperor had not requested such evidence, my sixth sense told me that adding these words wouldn't hurt. It could even help.
Very well, said Nati with relief, and a white sphere suddenly appeared around me.
Phew! I hadn't imagined that my readiness to speak the oath might be interpreted as me taking it. I am starting to like this turn of events.
I had to make sure that you are innocent,
the Emperor explained his actions, while Tisha smiled shyly for the first time during the meeting.
+300 to reputation with the Malabar Emperor. Current level, respectful. You are 2,000 points away from esteemed status.
Since we've settled the matter of the scroll,
Nati twirled the item in his hands and then offered it to me.
It's yours for the time it takes you to craft the chess set. I cannot impede the recreation of the legendary set, and must do everything I can to assist in this process. As for now, I must thank you, Mayan, for Tavia. I knew that she had concealed a dagger, and I was prepared to lose that lovely girl. I don't much like these dynastic marriages.
It wasn't me alone, I instantly spoke up, remembering Stacy. If it hadn't been for Anastaria, I would not have succeeded. It was only because she has the ability to meet with you whenever she likes that what happened, happened.
I know, Nati smiled wearily. I have already sent her a herald to express my gratitude and deliver a present. After all, she could only request one meeting with me, and she used this single request for you, without even asking for the reason. Such trust does not come cheaply.
Stacy had used her only admission to the palace on me? She could have sold the admission for, hadn't Eric said, 250,000? But why? I'm beginning to understand this girl less and less. To be honest, I didn't understand her so well to begin with. However, at least her actions used to make perfect sense. Now, though, I get the impression that she is acting on her emotions. Like me.
How is it going with the barbarians?
Nati asked.
The deadline for summoning the herald expires tomorrow, and if you don't set out to the dwarven lands, you will lose the castle and the title.
I remember, Your Grace. Thank you for reminding me, I thanked the Emperor. We were training with the Patriarch for the past month and returned to Anhur's only yesterday. We will summon the herald this evening. Neither I nor anyone in my clan wishes to miss out on such a unique opportunity.
When Tisha found out what you did for Tavia,
the Emperor smiled suddenly and leaned back in his armchair.
She pushed me against a wall and demanded in no uncertain terms that I give you a reward. All my attempts to explain that your reward was the yin-yang fell on deaf ears. According to my daughter, he who helped unite two hearts deserves more than some ordinary stone. I have updated information about the barbarians, so you will not need to fly anywhere. In fact, this assignment has turned out to be more complicated than it first seemed.
Your Excellency? I looked quizzically at the Emperor when he trailed off abruptly.
Castle Urusai, which I intend on granting you, is located here.
A detailed map of the Empire and its neighboring lands appeared on the massive table. The Emperor took a moment to study the map, and then pointed at one of the outlying areas.
the thin line of imperial lands, like a wedge hundreds of kilometers long, separated the free lands from Cartus on their way to the ocean. My potential castle was situated not far from the port city of Narlak, the only imperial city with access to the sea on the southern part of the continent.
The dwarven lands are here.
The Emperor indicated an expansive region on the map, which was densely dotted with mountains, and began not far from Narlak, just past the Freelands.
The barbarians used to reside in this region.
Nati outlined another area among the Freelands and right beside my future castle. Why did the barbarians flee in the direction of the dwarves instead of attacking Narlak? I asked, surprised. All that lies between them and the city was Urusai. Why would they journey so far away?
Therein lies the complicated part. According to our reconnaissance, there is some kind of monster in the castle. Narlak is very well defended from any magical attacks. After all, it is our only corridor to the ocean. As a result, it seems that the barbarians became the only available fodder for the monster. Not one of the 30 scouts we sent to Urusai has returned, so we simply don't know what we're dealing with. In general, I figured out the reason for the barbarians' flight from their lands and their attack on the dwarves without you. Now, we just have to decide what to do about that castle.
Since you started this conversation, I assume you've already come to a decision?
You are correct. I have. In the Dark Forest, you demonstrated that you are capable, so I want to give you the opportunity to not only acquire that castle, but also the fame for having vanquished the monster. If you agree, I will name you the owner of the castle right this instant and bestow upon you the title of Earl. You will have 3 months until the next clan competition to deal with the monster and Castle Urusai. If you manage it, the castle and the title will be yours forever. If not, you will receive Castle Drangor, which is located right here.
The Emperor indicated another point on the map, not far from Sintana, the dwarven capital.
But you will lose your title.
And if I refuse? I asked, just in case.
You will receive Drangor right away. I am not in the habit of making presents to those who cannot handle them. What do you say? Are you prepared to discover what lies concealed in the depths of Castle Urusai?
Update on the Inevitable Evil quest. The cause of the barbarian's flight is a monster inhabiting the castle's dungeon.
A long text appeared, recapping everything the Emperor had just told me and culminating with two buttons, accept and decline. Before pushing anything, I took some time to examine the situation from all possible angles. The pros were that I had Plinto and Anastaria, who could smoke any monster out from any dungeon. Narlak, as I understood it from the map, was a location for players of levels 150 to 220, so there was unlikely to be anything that dreadful or high-level lurking there. Likewise, that location would be well-suited to leveling up both me and my low-level officers. We had not yet reached even level 100, and would therefore gain extra experience against level 150 monsters, both for quests completed and monsters slain. Another pro was the proximity to one of the Imperial Trade Centers, which would allow us to trade with NPCs in addition to other players and earn bonuses. My own personal castle and title.
What else? I think that's about it. Now on to the cons. There weren't many of these, but they were quite significant. A great, even humongous, distance from Anhur's. Considering that all of the main events take place in the capital, wasting hundreds of thousands of gold on portals, and even then, if we got lucky with our mage, was a serious expenditure to keep in mind. Naturally, maybe it wouldn't come out to hundreds of thousands. That was a bit of an exaggeration, but it'd be a significant expenditure either way. The distance from Urusai to Anhur's was about thrice the distance from Farstead to Anhur's. Next, the monster. What could have forced an entire tribe, living peacefully in the Freelands, to flee its home? Surely this was a bit worse than a crocodile. Another con was the extreme proximity to the Freelands and Cartus, both places I could expect other players to attack from. Opening the map, I had to add to my list of cons the proximity to a third empire. Guernica's capital was also located in the south of the continent, albeit deep in the free lands. The textbook way to handle this is to reject the Emperor's offer and take the castle near Sintana. Why bother with extra troubles? On the other hand, receiving a title in a game in which no other player had ever received one, with or without a castle...
"I knew that you would not be frightened by some monster," the Emperor said with satisfaction.
The world around me wavered and melted, and we suddenly found ourselves in the throne room. Nati approached the throne, which was surrounded by the stones of light and pierced in its center by the black dagger of Guernica. He turned to me and said triumphantly, "Bend your knee." A shining sword appeared in the Emperor's hands.
"I hereby bestow the title of Earl on High Shaman Mayan for a duration of 3 months. If he manages to vanquish the monster of Castle Urusai, the title shall belong to him and his descendants forever. Arise, Sir Mayan."
"Clan achievement gained. Masters of a castle. You have earned the achievement Earl, plus 60% to worker production and gathering speed. Unique achievement gained. First free Earl of Barleona."
"I thought you promised you'd take it easy."
Instantly came a chat message from Anastaria. Baroness Anastaria.
"Earl?"
"Talk about punching above your weight."
Plinto could not refrain from commenting on such an event.
"Mayan is as much an earl as I'm a ballerina. No, but seriously, has he seen himself in the mirror lately? All he's good for is breeding nightmares. Baron Plinto is as ever a fine wit."
To my great surprise, Klutzer chimed up in my defense.
"Considering the terror of his own mug... Let's have it, Mayan. How did you manage to complete the quest?"
Klutzer asked.
"We haven't even gone anywhere yet."
"I think I know."
Anastaria sent another message. "Oh, don't worry. It's nothing special. I'll tell you guys all about it this evening."
"Evening? Forget evening. Let's have it now. Where are you? We're all suddenly barons, and he wants to put off explaining until evening."
"Sorry, guys. It will have to be this evening. Have some patience, please."
"In 2 weeks, the Herald will take you and your people to the castle," said the Emperor once I closed the chat window. "You will be able to buy portals to Anhur's in Narlak. The price of one portal will cost you and your clanmates only 50,000 gold. I will make sure that the Mage of Narlak is apprised of my decision. Remember, Mayan, You have 3 months to vanquish the monster.
How can I be of service, O my brother? Do you come seeking wisdom as last time, or to improve your skills and expertise?
Said the mentor, as soon as I entered the shamanic residence. As I understood it, the news that a player had just earned the first title in Barleona had already managed to percolate through the various news channels of the game, since I was already being overwhelmed with new messages. The players were congratulating me on this triumphant occasion, and asking me for money, clan admission, and an introduction to Anastaria. Basically, it was life as usual. I still had a good while before our clan meeting at the Golden Horseshoe, so I went to the training grounds to complete my quest with the shamans. I didn't want to put that off for later, and I could take my time to enjoy the palace at some other date. About 10 players were picnicking right on the green grass. Another group was swimming in the pond, and only 2 were doing what shamans should be doing on the training grounds. Sleeping, that is. Thank you for your offer, mentor, but I'd only like to meditate at the moment.
A worthy pursuit, brother. Call me as soon as you need any assistance.
The mentor left, and I found a suitable place to contact Calatea, a patch of green grass under one of the trees. There were no picnickers here, and no one would bother me. Very good. All I had to recall now was how I had made the call last time. Having reshuffled the spirits available to me, I finally found one who could help me. The air spirit of communication, rank 10. How had I summoned him last time? Considering that I was rank 9 and the spirit was rank 10. It's funny how it's sometimes easier to do things when you don't know what you're doing. If I'd have to summon a rank 20 spirit, I'd be at a real loss. Maybe the problem is simply that I'm thinking too much as of late. It's not healthy. Where are you, shaman? The shaman has 3 hands.
Attention! The summoning of the air spirit of communication cannot be interrupted. Because this type of spirit is beyond your rank, every minute your hit points will be reduced by 5%.
Calatea didn't pick up for an entire 3 minutes. And I mean entire, not only. I was familiar with the sensation of losing life, which reoccurred every minute, so I managed to overcome and ignore the intermittent stabs of pain. My endurance began to crawl upward lazily in increments of just 1 to 3%, which wasn't anything to be happy about. As of late, this stat really does grow too slowly. Maybe I should go looking for another little turtle?
Is that you, Natalie?
A pleasant female voice spoke in my head. Not exactly. Greetings, Calatea. My name is Mayan. I just read your letter and... A flash of pain coursed through my body, causing me to fall silent and miss the beginning of Calatea's sentence.
Are you?
Could you repeat that, please? I don't use this form of communication frequently and have trouble keeping my concentration.
Where are you?
The girl repeated. On the shamanic training grounds in Anhurs.
Oh, excellent. Go ahead and end the communication. The emotions you're sending me are making it difficult for me to concentrate as well. I'll jump over to you in a second.
Calatea hung up somehow, leaving me on my own with the spirit. I'm constantly stunned by how little I know. But who could even explain to me how someone could end a communication like this? First, Guernica, now Calatia. They're all such great and outstanding shamans that I'm even beginning to feel sorry for myself. It's like I've been homeschooled.
So this is your favorite student?
The same pleasant female voice sounded from behind me, causing me to whirl about and jump to my feet. Two harbingers appeared beside me. Cornick, smiling wryly as if the dark forest never happened, and a woman with bright red hair. The woman's appearance was stunning. High cheekbones, a wide jaw, deep-set hazel eyes, and small green ears, jutting like straws in opposite directions. Calatia was an orc. More precisely, an orcish maiden. Or is it orcess? I don't know what the proper term for her was, but the main gist was evident. She was large and green.
Not quite a student, and not quite a favorite, replied Cornick,
whose full attention was devoted to the girl.
But there is a certain something about him. Man, allow me to introduce the loveliest shaman that I've ever met on this plane, Calatia. She has flown to us from Astrum, and I am already beginning to entertain the idea of doing some traveling. If such beauties become harbingers, this world will survive a long while yet.
The goblin turned his attention back to Calatia, and here I realized something. Once upon a time, I was fortunate enough to receive the Romeo and Juliet achievement, when in the guise of an ugly green toad, I seduced some dark goblins. Of course, Cornick was not dark, but he was a goblin, and it was therefore highly probable that orcish maidens, too, made him swoon. He may be knee-high to a grasshopper, but in his mind he's a Casanova. Another love-struck goblin. It's a pleasure to meet the head of the Order of the Dragon, I greeted the girl.
Man,
Calatia nodded in my direction, forcing a sigh of adoration from Cornick. It seems that the girl had grown quite tired of the NPC's attentions, because she turned to him and said,
I'd like to speak with Mayen. May I? I'll return after I'm done, and we will continue our tour of Anhurs. Okay?
Cornick mumbled something, his eyes filled with sadness. But then, as if suddenly having thought of something, he perked up, grinned, and vanished. And this is the eternally wry harbinger of Malabar? Shamans these days.
I never imagined goblins have such a thing for orcs,
Calatia complained.
I've been in Anhurs only a couple weeks, and I'm already dreaming of the day I go back. Anywhere I look, there's Cornick. Tell me, what's your spirit rank?
9.
9?
Calatia asked, surprised.
How did you manage to summon the air spirit of communication, then? He's rank 10, after all. Are you specialized in air, too?
I decided to keep mum about having summoned the spirit of communication back when I was still rank 1. So I simply shrugged my shoulders, allowing Calatia the opportunity to come up with her own answer.
I see. You don't wish to share such information. That's reasonable. What can I say? But can you tell me a bit about yourself? How did you become a shaman? Why did you choose this class? How did you pass your first initiation? I have so many questions that I don't even know where to begin.
I have plenty of questions for you, too, I interrupted Calatea. How did you manage to become head of the shamans? How did you become a harbinger? How did you obtain so much reputation with the spirits? And how did you abort my call to you just now? Trust me, I have no fewer questions than you, if not more.
Let's have a chat, then. Calatea smiled. I propose we take turns. You ask, then I ask. It'll be more efficient that way.
All right, I agreed. But I need to take care of some business first. I'm all yours after that.
We prefer the term quest. It's some ancient term, I guess. So, do you need to go somewhere urgently?
No, I can take care of it here just as well. I have to replace the current head of the Shaman Council.
What?
Roared Calatea. But I had already switched my attention to the task at hand. The Shaman Mentor was standing nearby. The time had come to resolve the Prontho issue.
How can I help you, brother?
I need to call the Shaman Council. What do I need in order to do that?
A high shaman requires a fairly serious reason,
came a strange male voice from behind me.
In order to summon the Shaman Council. As head of the council, I am prepared to hear you out and determine whether the summons is justified. If I approve, the council will gather immediately. If, however, I reject your request, you will lose a rank. Do you insist on summoning the Shaman Council?
I turned to see Shyam, the current head of the Shaman Council. He was about a head taller than me. A red fluttering cape, a hat with horns, a staff, a tambourine and mallet hanging from his belt. The high shaman was dressed in full combat gear. All he needed was a totem, and he'd be ready to go into battle.
Not only do I insist on summoning the council, I replied, without taking my eyes from the dark and shining, almost black, eyes of the shaman, but I intend on accusing its head of treachery. This, for his use of shadows in the duel with Prontho, and for his revealing to Garenika how to catch Kornik.
This last accusation came out of me unwittingly, spurred, no doubt, by my feelings. The question of how Garenika had managed to catch the Harbinger had not given me peace for a long time. Kornik could move instantly from one place to another, and yet Garenika had bound him and delivered him to the castle of the Fallen. How? The only explanation that lent itself was betrayal. Yet who could betray a Harbinger, and how, remained a mystery. Until now, when seeing Shyam, the pieces fell into place. Kornik's capture was the work of the head of the council.
"This is a very serious accusation,"
Shyam replied with a smirk.
"I believe you have spent too much time in the sun today, and your brains have gone half-baked. I have never heard a more stupid accusation leveled at my person. Where is your evidence? You have none. My decision is as follows. A false accusation is not sufficient grounds to summon the council. I therefore strip you of your rank as high shaman and demote you to elemental shaman. This decision shall enter force and effect right this very—"
"The word has been uttered and demands consideration, Shyam."
It was as if the surrounding world had gone mad when the supreme spirits of both worlds spoke. Even the trees shook, bowing deep unto the earth.
The napping players jumped to their feet and began looking about, frantic to understand what had awoken them, while the swimmers paddled desperately for the banks. No one wished to find themselves having to respawn.
"This accusation is far too grave to allow you to remain the head of the council. If Mayan is speaking falsely, he shall be demoted to beginner shaman. If not, you shall be punished. Cornick, while the investigation is pending, you shall act as head of the Shaman Council. That is all."
"I abide by the words of my lords," said the goblin harbinger, appearing a few steps away from me and casting an unfriendly look at the former head of the council. This time around, the goblin had none of his earlier Casanova airs. It was as though the orcess was not standing beside him.
"So, that was your doing, was it, Shyam? In all of Barleona, there were but three sentients who knew where I would appear and when. And it was exactly then and there that I found Guernica waiting for me."
"Your pupil lies," Shyam parried calmly. "He cannot furnish a single shred of evidence for his words."
"Perhaps he cannot, but the Shaman Council can. Cornick, summon the council. The time has come to turn to history, to unearth what took place in the duel between Prontho and Shyam."
"As you wish, O lords."
Cornick bowed his head, without, however, looking away from Shyam. Then he smirked and vanished.
"What can I say?"
the former head of the council said to me, for some reason.
"Your accusation has been heard and recorded. Cornick will return soon, the council will assemble, and everyone shall see the truth. But before that happens, I, High Shaman Shyam the Alteran, challenge High Shaman Mayan to a duel. Your punishment will come now. I will avenge my brother. Prepare to fight."
"You have been attacked by an NPC and may respond. Please note that this attack is part of an ongoing quest. Therefore, you are allowed to use the Dragon's Breath spell without having reached Dragon Rank 50. Damage taken, 50,232. 52,411 from Supreme Spirit, minus 2,179 from Magic Resistance. Total hit points, 1 of 29,510. During the Restoration of Justice quest, you may take up to 10 hits from the former head of the Shaman Council.
"What?"
Shyam's scream could probably be heard throughout all of Anhurs. Rising from the ground where the spirit's attack had thrown me, I shook my head to bring myself back to consciousness and smiled. It hurt, true, but I have 10 hits worth of breathing room during which I need to make sure that Shyam is sent to an early retirement.
"The Supreme Spirits are on your side, Mayan,"
Shyam yelled mistakenly, still not understanding why he could not destroy me. Another 2 summoned spirits didn't do anything to me, besides reducing my regained hit points back to 1.
"However, Guernica taught me a thing or two."
As he spoke these words, shadows began to form in the hands of the former head of the Shaman Council. That was that. Shyam had exposed himself. Although one shaman challenging another to a duel is not exactly uncommon,
The use of such entities in battle was unequivocally anathema to everything the shamans believed. Consequently, Shyam would never again become head of...
Quest, restoration of justice completed. Speak to the head of the council to receive your reward.
I will deprive you of your shamanic powers, even if it costs me my life!
Roared Shyam, aiming the shadows at me. The distance between us was not great, about 20 meters, so I had absolutely no time to consider what I should do. The time had come to react, and do so promptly. Single combat, or a duel, as they called it, is a highly regulated affair. Step to the left or step to the right, and you could be held in violation, and therefore forced to forfeit. During the duel, the duelists may use anything in their arsenal. Spirits, fists, boots, claws, tails, fire. The shadows that Shyam were resorting to, however, were not natural to our class, nor to his race, and were therefore forbidden. I am a dragon, after all. By the way, if shadows are prohibited, why is Shyam still attacking me? And where is Kornik? Why hasn't the duel been called off? I only have 6 free hits remaining. I could throw the spirits I had at Shyam until the end of my sentence for all the good it would do. So, remembering that I could now use dragon's breath, I decided to transform. The transformation took only a few moments, at which point a new notification appeared before me.
Do you wish to activate Acceleration Level 1?
Back in the Dark Forest, the Patriarch absolutely forbade me from attacking anything, explaining that Dragon's Breath was a very dangerous weapon. Had I breathed even a couple times, the Dark Forest would have become a plain of ash. As a result, this would be my first time using my new race's attack. Once upon a time, Draco had reached his acceleration level 6, almost losing his tail in the process like a common lizard. Now the time had come for me to find out what my totem had felt. The fiery breath scattered the shadows as if they'd never existed. Very good. I was afraid I'd have to embody them first and then destroy them. A single flap of my wings brought me right up to Shyam. The time had come to play firefighter.
No!
Shyam's pained scream tore across the training grounds.
I will destroy you, you overgrown lizard! You shall not live!
Damage taken. Do you wish to activate Acceleration Level 2?
The first level of acceleration had not hurt Shyam very much. Even though he was probably pretty hot, he had nevertheless managed to throw a protective dome over himself, which negated the damage from my flame. He had even, somehow, found the time to throw another salvo of shadows at me. I had 5 hits left. No, things could not carry on like this. I had to activate Acceleration Level 2.
You can't win!
Yelled Shyam, summoning another shadow. A percussion ensemble struck up a rickety tune inside my head, but I kept my concentration and went on gradually burning through the shaman's protective dome. It's too bad that I could only use Dragon's Breath in this particular quest. It was a nice little trick. If I could ignore these booming drums, most players wouldn't stand a chance against me. In particular, those who were accustomed to fighting up close, like the warriors and the rogues. I'd just take off, accelerate, and begin to pour fire from above, ignoring all attempts to prod me with swords and daggers. Hellfire would definitely enjoy that sight. But Acceleration Level 2 did not do much good. Healing spirits were restoring Shyam's hit points almost as soon as I managed to burn through his defenses.
To make things worse, Shyam was recasting the Dome of Protection as soon as he lost it. I would have to burn harder. A flute had now joined the percussion in my skull, but I didn't have any other choice. I don't want to surrender and hand Shyam over to the Council for his comeuppance. He's the one who started it with his shadows, and I intend on sending him to the place where he got them from.
Do you wish to activate Acceleration Level 3?
There were no more flutes to join the orchestra, which was a good thing, yet now a weariness across my entire body joined the drums. I immediately recalled my combat with Prompto, when my body suddenly turned to dough that desired only to go soft upon the ground and forget its horrible suffering. A strange metallic taste appeared in my mouth. My eyes were tearing up, but the result was inspiring me. Shyam could only defend himself now, as if he had entirely forgotten how to attack. He was yelling something or other as he recast his dome and summoned healing spirits over and over again. But I could not tell what, since it was impossible to hear over the raging fire. Damn, I still wasn't getting anywhere. I'd have to try harder.
Do you wish to activate Acceleration Level 4?
At Acceleration Level 4, I understood that this was my limit. The drums and the unearthly weight was now topped off by a savage pain that tore my body into tiny pieces. I don't know how the victim of an acid